Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Before I introduce my guest, let me just say a few words about global research. Really need to do that from time to time, and let me do it this morning in two respects. I've said before, global research operates by the support it gets from its readers and hopefully listeners to this program. It accepts no other outside source of funding, absolutely not, certainly not from any group, organization, individual affiliated with corporate interest. That would literally corrupt the purpose of the site. Readers and listeners to this program, keep it going. Take a look at the site today. My goodness, every day there's such a wealth of important material on it. Let me just mention a couple of things. I'll put a plug in for an article I put out last week about potentially mandatory vaccinations coming in this country that are extremely dangerous, that nobody should take. And we'll have at least one program coming up, I'm afraid it'll be early in July, on that topic, and maybe another program as well. It's too important not to discuss and discuss again. A couple of articles I'll refer you to. An important one about a meeting going on as we speak by Michael Hudson. He's been on this program a number of times. He'll be back on the 1st of July. It's a meeting going on in Russia. It's about de-dollarization, possibly dismantling America's financial military empire. How about that? He writes about there was a G20 meeting in April that he referred to possibly as early signs of the last rites of American hegemony. How about that? This meeting may be another site. The country's getting fed up with what we're doing. Certainly today's topic is one thing they may be fed up about. The article that Bill Engdahl wrote called "A Tale of Two Diverging World Economic Worlds," basically the same theme, emerging countries, the more dominant ones, but others as well, just fed up with the way America operates and its G7 partners. They all aligned on the same mission, which really is exploiting the lesser countries around the world. And how many countries are going to put up with that for how long? Well, it's gone on for decades. It's high time they got fed up and did something about it because they're locked into a very self-destructive system. Let's get on with today's program. My guest is Kevin Zeese. Kevin is executive director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics. His projects include Voters for Peace, Prosperity Agenda, Climate Security, and True Vote. He's also a longtime political activist, and I hope I got this right, Kevin. You were Ralph Nader's 2004 spokesperson during his political campaign.
That's right.
You're also part of an effort to get the Bush administration torture lawyers disbarred. And we're talking about names that I think listeners are familiar with, John Ashcroft, Alberto Gonzalez, Michael Mukasey, Michael Chertoff, Douglas Feith. Oh, man, I've had a few things to say about it. Well, I've said something about all of them from time to time. John Yeo, 12 in all. We're talking about torture. Torture is official U.S. policy, sadly. That music means we need to take a break, Kevin. I haven't even said hello to you. Welcome to the program, but let's take that break, come back, and we'll get into the discussion. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Back to the News Hour. I'm on with Kevin Zeese. We're talking about Bush administration torture lawyers. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm delighted. This is a very important topic for me. So what you're doing is crucially important, and I'm delighted to have you on. I'm looking at your May 18th filing statement, and I love the heading on top. Let me just read it to listeners. You say, using a license to practice law to facilitate torture should result in disbarment. Well, I would say that's a good start, Kevin. It should result, I'm sure you will agree, to a heck of a lot more than that. But begin with disbarment, and let's really hold these people accountable. But you're in this. You have a YouTube video, and you have the full statement that you made. But you're involved in this on a regular basis. Explain what's going on.
Well, basically, we looked at what was going on in Washington on torture and saw not very much, and looked like Washington was in a vice grip, unable to deal with the issues. We felt like citizens had to do something. And so with my colleagues at Bell Revolution, bellrevolution.us, and with our organization, votersforpeace.us, we started to organize a coalition of hundreds of organizations to start to take action. And our basic view is that the rule of law needs to be applied here. That is the only way to remove this toxicity from the body politic. And applying the rule of law begins, we think, with the disbarment of these lawyers, but that's just the first step. Additional steps include, a special prosecutor in the end, but also a public investigation so people know what's going on with torture, what happened with it, why it is against the law, and why it's an ineffective choice. It actually is of no value to us and does more harm than good. And then we need a special prosecutor who can apply the facts to the law and not even look at the politics, just, apply the facts of the law and let us be a nation of laws again. And the reason I think we're stuck in a vice grip in Washington is because there's so much complicity. There were 40 briefings of Congress, and Congress mostly remained silent. Eric Holder, the attorney general, when he was with the Clinton administration, he approved renditions where people could be taken from our control and brought to other countries to be tortured. The Office of Professional Responsibility and Department of Justice has been sitting on for 5 years now a report that would, we hope, recommend disbarment of John Yoo and Jay Bybee. President Obama now has, decided not to release torture photos despite a court order to do so. And those torture photos would have shown a program of torture that had a widespread impact and would have resulted, we think, in a much more aggressive response by the public demanding a public inquiry. No special prosecutor. So we see this as the first step, and we're trying to get people active and involved. You can go to votersforpeace.us, and there's an icon on torture there. You can take action, write to the president, write to your members of Congress, write to the attorney general. You can also go to disbartorturelawyers.com and join in our litigation effort to disbar the torture lawyers.
Kevin, there's no question that the way to get something out of our government is for enough grassroots stirring of the pot.
That's the only way
it gets done. It never gets done from the top down.
These people,
you're right, the Democrats are as dirty as the Republicans. They're involved in this stuff, not just in the Clinton years. This stuff goes back decades. The CIA, there's conclusive evidence that at least from the 1950s, CIA came into existence in 1947. But it really was just a change of names. It was the OSS before that in World War II. And all the dirty stuff went on at that time, too, back in World War II. We were just as dirty as the Nazis, just as dirty as the Japanese. The dirty hands were pretty universal. So all through these decades, this kind of stuff has gone on abroad here. Even in this country, the stuff that goes on in U.S. prisons is absolutely outlandish, not to all people all the time in all places. But there are nightmarish stories about what goes on. People have no idea about it. And at the highest levels of government, there's complicity right down the line. So, of course, they're going to stonewall and do nothing. But work that you're doing, Kevin and others, is so crucial. If we can break the ice and get some real criminals held to account, then we can go further from there and start tackling other abuses. I mean, the menu of abuses, Kevin, besides torture, is absolutely endless. Just think about all the war crimes that have been committed.
No question about it. And, I think that as far as the torture goes, it is important to realize this is a long-term problem that Bush-Cheney brought to a new level of aggressiveness. I mean, it was a routine practice in Iraq and Afghanistan, and Human Rights Watch reports that 98 people died in the custody of U.S. Detention centers in Iraq and Afghanistan, and many more are still missing, so we don't know what happened to them. We know that General McChrystal, who's now in charge of Afghanistan, led a group at Camp Nemo, which did tortures, and two people died there, and five officers were found guilty of prisoner abuse. There's reports that McChrystal hid the evidence from the Red Cross, and now he's in charge of Afghanistan. And, of course, Cy Hirst even goes further and describes Crystal as the Cheney's assassin who was involved in assassination of, targeted assassinations in Iraq. So it's a messy and ugly scene, and I don't think we've seen the worst of it yet, and that's why we need a public investigation so that the public can know what's going on. There are still some of the public who think that torture is a good idea, and I think if we have a public discussion of that, that number will shrink, because it's obvious from hearing from FBI and CIA interrogators, from people who train our military to respond to torture, that torture actually does more harm than good. It produces false information, not accurate information. Indeed, some of the false information linking Saddam to al-Qaeda came from a tortured suspect who was renditioned to Egypt, where he is tortured, and he made the claim at our request, at the torturer's request, that Saddam and al-Qaeda were linked when, in fact, they were not. And that made it into General Powell's speech before the U.N., when he was Secretary of State. So it helped to lead the way to a war that shouldn't have happened, and it was misinformation from torture that helped to do that. And in fact, I think that's what they were using torture for, was more for propaganda than for real information. There's a report by the Senate Armed Services Committee that says that most of the questions asked of these torture victims was about links to al-Qaeda and Saddam as opposed to threats to the United States. So it seems like, which is what torture is usually used for, is for propaganda, not for getting real intelligence.
And part of the propaganda is to say that we've taken bad guys out of circulation. One of the dirtiest parts of the story, Kevin, is most of the people swept up in Iraq and Afghanistan were absolutely innocent bystanders.
Yep.
Oftentimes, they simply were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's right.
There were bounties. I know in Afghanistan for sure, likely in Iraq just as well, there were bounties offered for al-Qaeda in Afghanistan for so-called Taliban. Taliban is whatever a person decides he wants to be at any time. If the Taliban are dominant, then people may join the Taliban. If another group comes into prominence, they may shift from one group to another. But bounties were paid on innocent people. They were swept away, and we created the mythology that we were taking bad people out of circulation. And of course, if you beat up on somebody bad enough long enough, they'll say anything you want that they want to hear just
That's
to get
right.
the pain to stop.
That's right. And in fact, Bill Moyer's journal did an excellent piece on torture, and a lot of things that you just mentioned were actually shown in video. There's also a movie called Tortured Democracy that does it as well. What they showed was leaflets being dropped from the air in Afghanistan offering those bounties. And those bounties were large bounties for Afghanis, enough to really, because that's a poor country, the third poorest country on earth. And so when we start offering to shovel money into their pockets, any Arab in Afghanistan was at risk. And we've seen people released from Guantanamo now who were there for years and years and years, who were never charged with anything, and the government finally, after torturing them for years, decided they were not guilty of anything. And now we have this horrible policy that was announced by President Obama of preventive detention, where because these people were tortured, in other words, we have the evidence against them would be illegal, we can't bring them to trial. And so as a result, he's going to prevent their future criminality, supposedly, by holding them indefinitely without a trial. And it's because of our own torture that they can't be tried, and now they get held indefinitely without a trial. It's a really ugly situation, and it's disappointing that someone who claims to be a constitutional lawyer like President Obama would even consider something like that. I think he knows that in the long run the Supreme Court will find it illegal, but that will probably be 6 or 8 years from now when his term is up.
Oh, absolutely. I had no illusions about Obama, and we've had many discussions on this program, Kevin, about his agenda and the people in his administration, certainly the ones in high-level positions. And he's confirmed everything I foresaw before he took over last January, that he would simply maintain continuity from George Bush. And he's a virtual clone of the policies that the Bush administration carried out. And in some respects, we don't want to get into everything, but in some respects, what he's doing is even worse, certainly with regard to torture. He talks about ending it, but he continues the exact same policies. He talks about closing Guantanamo, but Guantanamo, if it is closed, it will make absolutely no difference whatsoever, because those people will be transferred to another torture prison. And whoever gets released, well, I don't know what decisions are made on who to release and when, but the ones who are, well, that will be irrespective of whether Guantanamo is running or not. But, I mean, this stuff is outrageous. It gets virtually no coverage in the major media. It's a topic on this program. There are so many things to cover. You can't cover everything all the time, but we've certainly discussed it before, and we will again. And yet this goes on, and these people carry on in their lives, and people guilty of very, very egregious crimes, and they go on to other jobs. They teach at universities. They join law firms. They do very well for themselves. Crime pays very well in this country, very sadly, and it seems that the biggest and worst crimes pay the best. Kevin, we need to take another break.
Okay.
Let's do that and come back. I get very exercised about stuff like this, as you do.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, along with Kevin Zeese. Talking about step one, get the Bush administration torture lawyers disbarred. Where do things stand right now, Kevin?
Well, we've filed with four bar associations with 12 lawyers that we're going to initially. We're looking at additional lawyers, CIA, Department of Justice, and White House lawyers who were involved in the torture plan, and we will probably be filing additional complaints. And we are constantly updating those complaints as new information comes in. We recently added, for example, when General Petraeus and General Sanchez and President Carter came out with positions close to ours, we made sure we got those into the record. We also had the ABA 2003 report criticizing torture. And so we're going to be constantly updating that and constantly involving more lawyers and more people in the process. And that's why we have the disbartorturelawyers.com set up so people can bring their organization or themselves into supporting this effort. And on votersforpeace.us, people can take action as well. And what we see coming up next as key points would be, first, the Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility will come out with its report. They've really been delaying that for a long time. I'm sure they're very concerned about what is the obvious recommendation they should make, which is to recommend the disbarment of a number of Department of Justice lawyers, and they've been sitting on that for 5 years now. So I think that we need to pressure that to come out, and that's one of the action steps you can take at votersforpeace.us. Then I think the next big thing that'll come out will be the court decisions on whether or not these torture photos that President Obama is not releasing will be released. That is critical. I think if those photos are released, it will show even worse abuses of prisoners than we've seen so far. It will show how widespread the torture program was, that it affected not just Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, but many other sites in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other parts of the world. And it will show it to be what it was, a program of widespread torture where torture was routine. And, you know, it's not just waterboarding. That's just part of the torture program. It's the freezing, the noise, the over the head with the mask, and the chained and fetal positions, and also in stress positions. It's just a whole series of things that were done to these people. And, you know, waterboarding gets all the attention. It should get some attention. That's obviously torture. We've put Japanese officers to death for torturing Americans that way, so it's obviously torture. And, you know, but the whole picture is much worse, and we need to really get that out to the public so people realize what we did and how it was really counterproductive to national security.
You know, Kevin, anybody who thinks that We need to do what we need to do, so go ahead and torture if it's going to help. They ought to sample a taste of some of what these people go through, aside from the fact that nearly all of them did absolutely nothing to justify their being detained. They ought to sample a little bit of it. There have been a few people who tried out waterboarding.
That's right. I was going to mention that. Yeah.
They couldn't stand it after a few seconds. They said, "Uncle, stop."
That's right. Christopher Hitchens, who's a supporter of the war in Iraq, he did it more than a year ago, subjected himself to waterboarding and lasted just a few seconds. Most recently, Mancow, I guess. He's a right-wing radio host who supported the torture, didn't believe that waterboarding was not torture, subjected himself to waterboarding, and within 5 seconds cried uncle and immediately changes the view that, in fact, waterboarding is torture. And what him and Hitchens and what trainers of our troops say is that the word waterboarding really doesn't describe it. It's really suffocation, it's really drowning, and it's, interrogation by drowning is the closest to what really happens, because that's what you're feeling. You're feeling like you're drowning, and in fact you are. Water is getting into your lungs, and that's what the process is about. And as I said, waterboarding is just one of many things. And we also know that 98 people died in custody. So even if you take these lawyers' memoranda, they talk about organ damage and near death being the limits. Beyond that, it's torture. If there's organ damage and near death, it's torture. But in fact, people did die. People did have organs and limbs destroyed by this torture. Human Rights Watch reports 98 deaths and also reports that there are numerous people who are still missing. So we went beyond even the tortured reasoning of these torture lawyers' memos, and which were already going beyond what the law says. The law, the Convention on Torture is very clear. It says, and that was signed by President Reagan, by the way. It's not like some left-wing thing. President Reagan signed the Convention on Torture, and it, basically says mental or physical harm as part of interrogation is torture. It's a very simple definition. And these lawyers were not giving legal analysis, but rather were giving the opinion that their bosses wanted to hear, which is torture is allowed. Because they didn't use the definition in the law. They had to create a new definition in order to make what was being done allowable with this false shield. And this false shield, by the way, of legal protection is why the torture program happened. If it had not been for these lawyers, the torture program would not have gotten off the ground. And there was dissent in the Department of Defense. There was dissent in the CIA. People expressed concern about committing war crimes, about being prosecuted. And this lawyer's shield with these false memos saying that they were not breaking the law is what made this torture program go forward. If they had told the truth and given an honest legal opinion, and it's very obvious what the legal opinion should have been, it should have been that the Convention Against Torture, the Geneva Conventions, which the U.S. led to be put into effect, the federal law against torture, the federal law against war crimes, the Army Field Manual, all make this kind of activity illegal. And if that had been said to the Department of Defense and CIA and FBI, there would have been no torture program.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin, and illegal, and there are no exceptions allowed
for
any reason.
That's right.
I mean,
there's
no ambiguity about these laws. A high school kid could read them and understand exactly what it says.
Exactly.
We need to take another break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Kevin Zeese, talking about the Bush administration torture lawyers. Kevin, it grieves me that I'm afraid you'll have Chapter 2 to work on before too long, and that will be the Obama administration torture lawyers. Of course, the Bush people put so many memos and documents and whatever in writing. I wrote an article many months back that I titled, "Torture as Official U.S. Policy." And I was, I'm not surprised that it's U.S. policy, but I was shocked at how many documents, all sorts of documents, memos and presidential orders and all sorts of things that more or less sanction torture. They do it in different ways, some of them more explicit than others. There was the infamous John Yeo, Jay Bybee, David Addington torture memo, 2003 or 2004. I mean, you read this stuff and you say, my God, I mean, these guys not only practice this stuff, they put it in writing so we can all read what they have tried to approve. It's okay. And, of course, they distorted, they twisted the law. And there's no way on earth you can do that, but they did. And so far they've gotten away with it. Well, as you're doing, we need a line in the sand drawn to put a stop to this kind of stuff.
Well, there's no question about the documentation, and we've only seen part of it. I mean, of course, if you were in the CIA or the Department of Defense and you opposed torture, you'd be writing memos to the file to protect yourself when this was all being discussed. And I bet there are a lot of those memos we have not seen yet. But when we submitted our first 12 complaints, we submitted a documentation of about 550 pages, and it included some of the memos you talked about, Red Cross reports, committee reports from the Senate, a whole range of stuff. And so this is a program we know a great deal about, but as I said, we don't know all of it. And I have a feeling when we do find out all of it, it's going to even be more shocking and cause more public anger and more public pressure to see something done. And the public is getting riled up. There's a June 25th Torture Accountability Day. You can Google Torture Accountability June 25th and get information about where there's events going to be in your place, near you. I'll be speaking at one in Washington, D.C. On that day. And so people are getting more and more angry. You know, when President Obama did his Webb Town Hall, he asked for people to submit questions to be covered, and torture accountability was the number one request at the time that they closed the voting. So it's something that people are much more concerned about. And once again, like on so many issues, the people are ahead of the politicians on this. They really want to see some accountability. They know that if we don't hold people accountable for war crimes, then they'll happen again. Future presidents will see they can get away with that kind of thing and not be held accountable. I think Vice President Cheney is showing the fear of accountability. He's like a criminal returning to the scene of the crime, you know, wiping up the fingerprints and putting up smoke screens and trying to talk his way out of any investigation occurring, because I think he knows that will go right back to him. In fact, one of the things we filed in our most recent update with the first 12 lawyers was some emails in the Department of Justice that specifically mentioned they were getting pressured by the Vice President and the President. Both were mentioned, Vice President and President, as far as approving of these torture practices. So there was pressure from the White House. It's known, and the question is, can we document it enough to really bring justice where it's deserved?
Well, read my article, Kevin, Torture as Official U.S. Policy.
Yep.
Easily Googled. I mean, I couldn't quote all of the documents that I found.
Yep.
I mean, they just went on and on and on. But I mentioned a whole bunch of them, and again, it was quite shocking. And of course, along with torture goes illegal wars, not just the obvious ones in Afghanistan and Iraq, but the proxy ones that we fight in various countries at different times.
Yep.
One's going on in Somalia. There's another one going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, this stuff is going on all over the place. Of course, in occupied Palestine all the time. But all of this goes hand in hand together, and something has to be done. You mentioned General McChrystal. I decided I had to say something about him myself. I'll mention him a couple of times in other articles. But this guy is an absolute brute. He's a guy who has absolutely no respect for the rule of law. He has contempt for human life. His Special Operations Command, he was active in Afghanistan. He was active in Iraq. Camp Nana. I discovered the existence of Camp Nana, a name I didn't know.
Yep.
There's another one called Camp Cropper. Probably listeners don't know anything about these camps. And then they have auxiliaries in different cities scattered around Iraq. The same thing has to be in Afghanistan. And all kinds of brutalities go on at these places. They won't even let the U.S. Army's Criminal Investigation Division investigators go into these camps. So the U.S. Army can't even send its own investigators in to take a look at what's going on in these camps. And, of course, the orders come from the very top. So in Iraq, it came from Stanley McChrystal. So Obama gets rid of the guy who was running Afghanistan, who certainly was not a good guy, and he puts an absolute thug in charge of the Afghanistan operations. So he will run Afghanistan much worse than George Bush did.
Well, yes, so far. I mean, you look at the civilian casualties in Afghanistan and Pakistan, it is getting so outrageous that the UN last week announced it wants an investigation of those policies. There's been, calls from both the Afghanistan puppet government and the Pakistani government calling for the U.S. to stop the drone attacks and the aerial bombardments. The drones reportedly kill 70 civilians for every one fighter they get. So it's a total disregard for civilians in the region. I don't see how that helps the United States win the hearts and minds of people who live there. I see how it might help for sure to enrage the local population and once again provide for a expansion of U.S. opposition, a recruiting tool for U.S. opposition. So so many of these policies are just they make absolutely no sense. They seem to just build on failure. I think the United States just thinks that with incredible hubris that our military power will overcome any opposition, and that we do have incredible military power. You know, spending as much as the whole world combined on the military. And that's the bigger mission of VotersForPeace.us is not torture issue is one issue, but our bigger issue is to organize people to really oppose this militaristic foreign policy, this military budget that's half of discretionary spending in the U.S. federal budget, and these prevent future wars of aggression is a main goal. And a war of aggression is essentially a war where you're not attacked, where you don't have UN permission to attack, and that's what the U.S. is involved in both Afghanistan and in Iraq. And we never had permission to do those attacks. Neither country was threatening us. The Taliban, if we really had wanted to go after Al-Qaeda, if that was really the source of 9/11, we could have used the paramilitary force to go after them and be more focused rather than this blunt instrument of war that is so much more expensive in human life and in treasure of a treasury that's greatly in debt. We've got to find a new alternative to this empire military strategy that we've had now for many decades. It's time to focus on a new foreign policy that will be more effective. I don't see Obama doing that. He seems to be carrying out maybe not a neocon foreign policy, but a neoliberal and realist foreign policy, as they say. But either way, it's a continuation of empire and a continuation of a military-dominated foreign policy.
Well, he proposed the biggest ever military budget in history, Kevin. And the real numbers are well disguised.
If
you put every category into it, not just what the Congress will appropriate for so-called defense spending, the real numbers greatly exceed $1 trillion annually. Well, this is a major topic that's being discussed right now. Kevin, they may be taking a lunch break or dinner break, I don't know, but it's being discussed today and tomorrow in Russia by a group of countries called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, but the lead countries are China and Russia, also some former Soviet republics. Brazil will be there tomorrow, Iran, Pakistan, Mongolia. A couple of other countries, I believe, have observer status. But these countries are very concerned about this. Well, China and Russia, absolutely, are being surrounded by U.S. military bases. We'll have a program coming up in a couple of weeks on the bases of the U.S. empire around the world,
yeah.
A very important topic that never
very
gets
important.
Discussed.
Right.
We'll have
great.
A program about it, and we'll explain it. I mean, this is outlandish stuff. These people are absolutely fed up about it, and they're coming together, and they're reacting, and there could be some cracks in the U.S. dike. If this goes on and more countries get more fed up, then the days of American hegemony may be in the decline. I think we've been in declines for the past few decades.
I think you're right about that, and I think it's kind of at this point kind of coming to a peak. We've obviously overstretched our military greatly, and it's at a breaking point. It's been a breaking point for a while, and they're having a hard time recruiting people. They need a lousy economy at home in order to help their recruits, and that's the best thing they have going out of this lousy economy. The economy itself is in a shambles. The fundamentals are anything but firm. They are severely flawed, and they've been severely flawed for a long time. We've been haven't seen a raise for half American workers since 1973, and people have been surviving on credit card debt and home equity debt, with or both family leader parents working in a family in a household, and then also buying cheap goods made in foreign countries that undermine our industry. So our economy is nowhere in good shape. We have very high debt at all levels, commercial, personal, and government. We have no manufacturing or industrial base anymore in order to really have an economy based on something real. So it's the economy is a mess. The military is a mess. The empire is straining to stay alert. Now, we continue to have an incredibly overwhelming military force with just the aerial power and the sea power. Even if our troops are worn out, we can still bomb Tehran with ease, we are kind of unmatchable in that regard, and that is what's keeping American hegemony going. We no longer can do with our money and political power. We've both been weakened, but our military power, despite being strained, is still quite awesome and quite scary as far as control of foreign governments go.
Well, absolutely true, Kevin. This is all possible because foreign countries accumulate U.S. dollars by trade that their corporations bring in, and those dollars go to their central banks. And we don't allow a lot of other countries to buy up U.S. industry. Oh, G7 countries, we get involved buying each other's industries. But we don't let China and Russia come over here. We don't let India, Indonesia, Korea, so many other countries come in here and buy up U.S. Businesses. So they've accumulated all of these dollars. This gets complicated, and we'll have a program on July 1 about this. But basically, they have only one choice, and we'll explain it on July 1. They have only one choice. They have to recycle their dollars into U.S. treasuries. That's what they do with their dollars. Well, when they do that, that supplies this country with the money to continue its militarism, to continue all of the outlandish spending that we're doing, bailing out bankers and all the rest. If they can find a way out of this terrible cycle that they're in, and their buying of U.S. security stops, then the game is over. Well, sooner or later the game is going to be over, but I have no idea when.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The game is getting coming to an end. You're already seeing China talking about how they're uncomfortable having so much invested in the U.S. economy, and they see the fragile nature of our economy, and the world is not very happy with the economic collapse based on casino gambling called the stock market and the phony housing bubble that people saw. People could see it coming, but people also got caught up in the view that houses will always go up in value, and even though that never works out that way. So the world is not very happy with the U.S. Economic leadership at this point, and we'll see if we can keep forcing countries to buy our treasury bonds and treasury notes. I wouldn't be surprised to see that start to dwindle, and if it does, the U.S. economy's weaknesses will become more glaringly obvious than they already are.
Well, that literally is the source of funding to keep this country doing what it's doing. I hope they come up with a formula. The topic in Russia today and tomorrow, Kevin, is de-dollarization. They want a different system. They want a system out from under U.S. hegemony.
That's right.
Well, a real strong alliance between Russia and China would have some muscle. And if they can get other countries with them, Brazil, India, question mark, but others as well that are very definitely being harmed by this, then there really can be an alliance that can take on the U.S. And we may have the world's strongest military, but the military can't force other countries to buy our treasury securities.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. They've been doing that, but I do think that you're right about this potential alliance of countries that are fed up with U.S. hegemony, led by the Soviet Union and China. Throw in Brazil, some of the oil-producing countries like Venezuela, Iran, and I noticed the Iranian president decided to hold off his travel to Moscow for a day because of the unrest at home, but he's supposedly planning on being at that event tomorrow. And the fact that people are even openly talking about replacing the U.S. Currency as the world currency is a major change. That for someone to say that publicly is quite shocking to the international economic system, and should also already be making the U.S. nervous. Because if you look at our economy, we are in serious trouble, and there could easily be a second collapse. One of our other projects is Prosperity Agenda, which focuses on economic justice. It's prosperityagenda.us. And we focus on these kinds of economic issues, and there could easily be a second collapse. We had the personal real estate collapse that had such a big impact, but the whole commercial real estate market, which is even bigger, is in serious trouble as well, with all these retail stores going bankrupt, people be unable to pay their mortgages on these commercial properties, malls and strip malls and office buildings and some that are half empty in many downtown areas. If that commercial collapse occurs, it'll be a much bigger one, and we're already so far in debt and in deficit that we won't have the resources to buy our way out of it. And so it'll be a collapse that'll be even harder to control, and that could be just around the corner. It's not out of the question.
I don't think it's out of the question at all. We'll have a program on Friday by an economist who's been on before, Jack Rasmus. He has a new article coming out. I haven't seen it yet. He'll send it to me. I don't know the exact title, but he includes in it 18 reasons why there will be no economic recovery. I can't wait to see that article.
Oh, that sounds great.
And we'll talk about it on this program on Friday. Let's take another break, and we'll come back with a final segment. We'll be right back.
This is RVM. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Kevin Zeese, talking about prosecuting the Bush administration torture lawyers. Kevin, let me just say, you have an open invitation to come back on this program anytime. As you get more information, anything important that we can pass on to listeners, and enlist listener support to help you in what you're doing, because it helps all of us. Take the last few minutes and explain how listeners can go to your websites and follow what you're doing and get more information as you're posting it online.
Well, a couple of things. We really need, in this country, on almost every issue, the people get more organized, more active. We're up against a very powerful corporate power that has combined with government to really lock the people out of the process. We have to unlock that with people power. So votersforpeace.us, you can sign up. You can pledge to vote for peace candidates. You can go to our torture page and push for torture accountability by clicking and send letters to the members of Congress, to the president, to the attorney general. We'll be putting out alerts on that consistently as this project moves forward. You can also go to disbartorturelawyers.com to get involved in these complaints that we filed against the torture lawyers. You can have your organization join in as an organization. You can join as an individual. And on VotersForPeace.us, you can also sign up for a daily news feed on international issues related to the war and peace and militarism and get into that. If you want to get updates on economic issues, our economic justice site, prosperityagenda.us, also puts out a free daily newsletter. And also we have action alerts on a whole range of issues there that are also trying to challenge corporate power and create an economy that's not just for the elites, but for all Americans, that broadens the base of people who benefit from what will be a growing economy in the future at some point, and make sure that when it does grow, it grows in a way that people get empowered, get more control of their economic lives, more democratic economy than we currently have. And so prosperityagenda.us for news updates and activism on the economy, votersforpeace.us for activism, news updates on war, torture, and militarism, and disbartorturelawyers.com to get involved in this effort to hold the Bush-Cheney torture lawyers accountable.
And for listeners who didn't get all they have to do is go to globalresearch.ca, the weekly schedule of guests on the NewsHour is posted. It's in the left column under news. It's titled News, and it's usually pretty close to the top of the column. Click the website. You'll go to the schedule. You'll scroll down. You'll come to Kevin, and you'll see his organizations. You can go right to them online. You can follow what he's doing. And, Kevin, you absolutely have receptive listeners on this program. People who listen to programs like this are sick and fed up with what's going on. They should be. And they know darn well that you can't get this kind of information through the major media. They are paid liars. Their job is to keep you from finding out what you most need to know, the kind of information you always get on this program all the time, except we just have 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and they have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, lots of muscle, lots of money. We just have our spirit and our principles and our honor, and that's what this is all about.
Well, I'll tell you, the traditional media is losing power, and media like yours is gaining power, and that's going to be the future. And it really does take people getting active. That is the most important thing. It's great to be informed, but if you're informed about the reality and take no action, then you're complicit. So if you know what's going on, take action.
You got to do it, and we're out of time, Kevin. I wish we could go on, but they're going to cut away to the next program. My great thanks for coming on. Let's do this again as you have more things that need to be explained to listeners.
Okay, thanks so much.
And join us again tomorrow. We'll have another cutting-edge program. Please join us then.